This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. The Federal Reserve System is the central bank of the United States. It describes itself as an institution that is supposed to perform effective operations of the U.S. economy and more generally, the public interest. But a new Frontline documentary, The Power of the Fed, investigates how Federal Reserve policies prop up Wall Street and widen inequality. For the country's wealthiest, it has been a bonanza. Here is a trailer for the new Frontline documentary, The Power of the Fed.
The coronavirus pandemic has left millions of Americans out of work.
The people have gone now without 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 paychecks, and it's starting to catch up. They need food. It's the most basic thing.
Over the past year, we've seen how many Americans are living on the edge.
Have you got any income at the moment?
No. No. And we have kids too, so
you're not making any money at the moment?
No.
But while businesses were shuttered and millions were left unemployed, one place has been thriving like never before.
Stocks surging even as America enters its darkest chapter yet of this pandemic.
On Wall Street, it was a banner year.
The market has been open for 30 minutes and we've gone straight up.
The Dow rising nearly 18%, its best performance since 1987.
After a major dive, markets reached record highs. The pandemic would turn out to be a blip in the longest bull market ever. The price of stocks have skyrocketed, and so has the wealth of those who own them.
Elon Musk has added over $10 billion to his wealth just this week.
Some see signs of mania.
This GameStop situation, we will never encounter a setup like this again.
As more Americans try to get in on the party.
Right now, we're in a raging mania.
Some worry a crash is to come.
It's the burst of euphoria that typically brings these things to an end.
As the financial world has been diverging from the real world, I've been trying to understand the many forces at play. And I found one institution has been at the center of it all. The Federal Reserve, the nation's central bank.
It is the most powerful and least understood institution in the country. And it really is difficult to overstate how important this story is and how big this story is and how much it matters.
I've been speaking to current and former Fed officials.
Is that really the first time you're in a suit since COVID?
From the waist down.
Can I take my mask off?
Economists and titans of finance.
Nobody knows how this is going to turn out. This is an experiment.
I've heard that over and over, that we're living through an epic experiment run by the Fed.
I believe this is the economic story of our time.
An experiment that has been dramatically changing the American economy.
That is a trailer for the new Frontline documentary, The Power of the Fed. It's about an hour long, really important information, and you can watch it online now. Anya Borg is a producer and journalist who has been making films for Frontline since 2014 with James Jacoby. She is co-producer of the new documentary, The Power of the Fed. Hi, Anya. Thank you so much for this really important film, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, this is an issue that deserves so much more attention, and you definitely need an hour to really connect the dots. Why did you all decide to look at the Fed and go so deep?
Yeah, I mean, I think really we could have used more hours because this is such incredibly complicated subject matter. But we were just fascinated after March of 2020, as you know, the markets kind of crashed and we were all in lockdown, as to what was happening. And we were just really, you know, we're not financial reporters, James and I. We've done some financial stories, but we're general interest reporters. But we were kind of confused and interested in how was it that the stock market and all these various financial markets were going up even as companies were shuttered. And we found that really looking into that brought us to better understand the role of the Fed in the economy. And then as we kind of set out to understand what was happening over the past year, we initially thought we'd be making a film just about, you know, 2020 and 2021. And we found that, in fact, everybody we interviewed kind of kept setting us back and saying, no, this is part of a bigger experiment. This is part of a historical story about the way in which the Fed has been changing really for decades. And so the film kind of starts in 2008, and the bulk of it is actually historical, I would say, in nature, and kind of trying to understand how the Fed has come to play a bigger and bigger role in the economy at large.
Can you first tell us why the Federal Reserve is such a powerful institution, and generally, what is it supposed to do?
So the Fed has a mandate set by Congress, which is twofold. One is to promote maximum employment, and the second is to control the inflation and deflation, kind of the price of money. And it's trying to do both of those things with one primary lever, which is the interest rate. So it sort of has this large, complicated task and a somewhat simple lever, which to do that. And those things, you know, it's a kind of balancing act between how can it promote employment without letting the price of money run away from it. And that's sort of the complicated dynamic that it's always working with.
So let's talk about, I guess there's a couple things that the Fed has done over the last 10, 15 years that has had a drastic impact on the economy. First off, they began dropping interest rates to almost zero after the financial crash. And can you just talk about this? The fact that they dropped these interest rates to almost zero during the crash and then again during COVID.
Sure. So I guess one thing I left out when you asked kind of what the role of the Fed is it's also primarily to respond to financial crises. The Fed was created in 1913 because we'd had a series of financial crises. And the idea was that we needed to have a body that could respond to those. And so in 2008, during the financial crisis, the Fed sort of stepped up. And one of the first things that it did to try to get the economy moving again was to drop interest rates close to zero. And the idea of that was to try to make it easy for people and companies to borrow so that, you know, all these homeowners who's, you know, where suddenly the price of their home was falling, it would try, the idea was that it would make it easier for them to refinance. It would be easier for people to sell and buy homes to get things moving again. And I think that, you know, there's not a lot of controversy from the folks that we talk to about the role of the Fed in an emergency, that the Fed both in, you know, in 2008, 2009, and then again in March of 2020, really had to take some action. I think where it got a little bit more complicated and where we found many more people who sort of took issue with the role the Fed was playing was later when it was down the road, you know, a couple of years later when the Fed was sort of continuing to play what people described as a kind of activist role in the economy after the initial emergency had subsided.
And people in the film told you that they basically flooded the zone with capital. Trillions of dollars of easy money got pushed into the market, and all of that easy money sparked a rally in the stock market, which took off really, really fast. When you drive interest rates down so low, investors take big steps on the risk spectrum. So cheap money is the fuel for a financial investor. And as a result, the stock prices just keep going up and up.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is one of the really surprising things for me to learn, not as someone who didn't have a financial background, was that the way that part of what the Fed was trying to do was to push people kind of out of safe investments and into riskier investments. So by lowering the interest rate, it was making it easy for people to borrow, but it was also making, you know, your safe money, your bank account, your CD, those things weren't very lucrative. So it had this kind of overall impact of forcing institutional investors and investors into bigger and bigger risks. So pushing people, into the stock market, which thereby drove up the price of stocks. All of that was really kind of surprising to me. I wouldn't have thought if the Fed was, I think that for people in the financial world, that was like, you know, duh, of course that was what the Fed was trying to do. But I found it really, really surprising and interesting. And I guess one thing that we left out just in sort of explaining to viewers the actions that the Fed took, it was the first thing that it did was lower interest rates to near zero. And then the second thing that the Fed under Ben Bernanke decided to do was this thing called quantitative easing, which for many people was a huge escalation of the role of the Fed. And it had to do with kind of creating money, which is one of the things the Fed does, and using that money to buy things like mortgage-backed securities, things that, you know, financial assets that would then go on the balance sheet of the Fed. And it took to doing that in after the 2008 crisis. And it did it for about 5 years, buying about around $4 trillion worth of assets on its books. And then in March of 2020, when COVID hit, we kind of turned back to some of those same tools that it had employed after the great financial crisis of quantitative easing and buying bonds and buying assets.
Other people you spoke to in the film said that this created a massive disconnect between Main Street and Wall Street, and what the Fed was doing with this quantitative easing and bringing down the interest rates to almost zero was benefiting the wrong people. The people who did not need the help basically benefited from all of this.
Yeah, so there's a whole bunch of things in there that were fascinating to kind of learn about and tease out. So the first was that I think, everyone we talked to felt like the Fed is an incredibly well-intentioned body, that everything that they were doing was intended to spur economic growth in the larger economy, to get people back to work, to get people, to be able to refinance and buy homes. But that what was happening was that a lot of the kind of quote-unquote trickle-down benefits weren't really trickling down. And there's a lot of research out there, particularly, from 2008 to 2012, that period of time about, how much did the Fed help the real economy? And it's so hard to measure because these are such complicated, indicators. Was it working or not? But what is clear is that the benefits were incredible for people in finance. The benefits were incredible to publicly traded companies. The benefits were incredible to people, at the big banks. And the benefits for, whether or not it allowed people to get a better mortgage, the price on a mortgage, or whether it really helped, job growth, it was mixed. I'm sure it had some benefit, but it didn't really, what we found talking to people was that disconnect, it had more to do with how incredibly, how the Fed's action sort of propelled the world of finance over the past decade. It's just, as someone said to us in one of our interviews, cheap money is the fuel for a financial speculator. So what the Fed did was kind of, if you're in the business of making money from money, you're getting your raw material for free or at an incredibly good price. So anybody who was in the business of making money from money has done unbelievably well.
Right. And also another reason why that happened is because of these buybacks. Because mm-hmm. these companies were able to borrow so much money at very low interest rates, almost zero, they were able to buy back their own stock, make the shares more valuable, the prices higher, which then trickles to even more money and then higher CEO pay.
Yeah. I mean, buybacks are kind of just an example of how the Fed has these well-intentioned policies, which, may be having some minimal benefits, but how the way that a lot of this kind of happens in the real world and on Wall Street doesn't go according to the theoretical model. So I think buybacks in some ways are just kind of an example of something, which is that the Fed lowered interest rates in the hopes that it would propel businesses to borrow, to invest in infrastructure, to hire more workers, to grow, to stimulate economic growth across the economy. And, many companies, I'm sure, did do that. But what we found talking to people was that another kind of aspect of this is that what companies often saw was, hey, there aren't really great opportunities to invest right now. Hiring workers is really expensive and comes with a whole bunch of problems. But here's an opportunity for me to do financial engineering. And a lot of people we talked to who were kind of critical of this said, that's what I would have done. Like if you're the CFO of a company and this is the interest rate environment that you're presented with, you have to. You have almost a fiduciary responsibility to your shareholders to kind of take advantage of these incredible interest rates and to borrow money or do a bond issuance so that your company has a lot more money, and then to use that money to buy back the stock of the company, which boosts the share price. and, you know, is very lucrative for everyone at the company, but doesn't really, you know, I mean, there's some debate as to what benefit it can have to the overall company. I think some people think that you know, buybacks aren't entirely bad, but it's certainly not what the Fed is hoping companies will do with what they call the kind of accommodative conditions they're creating, right? The Fed is hoping companies will do something else, and companies are seeing an opportunity to do financial engineering.
As one reporter told you, what the companies should do or are expected to do is take that money, invest it in the company, hire more people, improve, you know, possibly employees' lives by creating more opportunities for them. But what they end up doing, in addition to the stock buybacks, is automate their plants and get rid of even more employees.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the studies have shown about how much that those buybacks has led to automation, but I think that was an observation we heard, you know, from a lot of different people, was that their sense was that in some ways, the way in which the economy is moving, that some of these conditions just have had these sort of perverse consequences of actually going in the opposite direction of what maybe the Fed hopes. And I don't know what the research shows about that.
You know, and what's incredible, Anya, is when you think about the low interest rates and all of this money being pumped into the banks and corporations, at the same time, the Republican Party took the corporate tax rate from 38% down to 21%. I mean, this was a massive, massive, I'm sorry, 35% down to 21%. Mm-hmm. This was a massive tax cut for corporations.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of debate around whether or not the corporate tax rate in this country is, you know, competitive. But I think what studies have shown, and I don't remember the numbers now, I don't have them on hand, but that a lot of that money from the corporate tax break in 2017, I think it was, went to buybacks, a huge percentage of it. And in fact, that was somewhat predictable. You know, Steve Mnuchin was asked about it before the tax cut, and you know, it should not have come as a surprise that that's what companies did with a lot of that money.
Today we're speaking with Anya Borg, a producer and journalist who has been making films for Frontline since 2014 with James Jacoby. Anya is co-producer of The Power of the Fed. It's a new Frontline documentary that explores how Federal Reserve policies prop up Wall Street and widen inequality. A number of economists and former Fed employees talk about how these policies actually do this and how they, you know, the real world effects that they have. And Anya, as we learn, and this did get a lot of attention and still does, over the last 16 months since the beginning of the pandemic lockdown, the combined wealth of 713 billionaires surged by $1.8 trillion. This is a gain of almost 60%. And this is according to inequality.org.
Yeah. I mean, you know, wealth inequality, the growth of wealth inequality is sort of one of the biggest issues of our day. And I think, you know, there are a lot of causes for it. And we're not intending to say that the Fed is the sole cause of rising inequality, but there certainly is a role that the Fed is playing. And I think it's been difficult for the Fed because they, you know, they can't, they're in a bind where it's hard for them to sort of be honest about that, the contributing role that they are playing. You know, when you have, as someone said in the film, I think when you have $1 billion, it's a lot easier to make $100 billion than when you have $100 in this particular environment where the Fed is, you know, propping up the markets and allowing everything to grow so quickly. So well, go on.
No, go ahead, please.
No, I was just going to say, and that was something that a number of people that we spoke to said they saw kind of early on that was. It's obviously gotten much worse over the past year and a half, or much more obvious to people. There have been some mitigating factors over the past year and a half that this time around, you know, Congress has acted and we've had extended unemployment benefits. We've had these stimulus checks. So there have been these other, you know, fiscal attempts to help people who are struggling during the pandemic. But after the 2008 crisis, I think there were some folks, including Joseph Stiglitz, who we interviewed for the film, who's a very well-known economist, who was sort of publicly out there saying, like, this is going to lead to rising inequality. And even inside, when you read the minutes of the Fed meetings, you know, in 2010, 2011, 2012, it was discussed. I mean, I think it was something that people, you know, on the Board of Governors were aware of and they were concerned about, but it was, you know, they're constantly trying to balance what they describe often as these trade-offs of, okay, well, we, you know, we have to stimulate economic growth. What are we going to do? We're in a recession, but the only tool we have to do this is really going to benefit, you know, people with assets more. Well, we have to do it. So it's just this really interesting discussion about trade-offs.
Right. And also people said that the message the Fed is basically sending to corporations is that don't worry, if there's a problem, the government is going to bail you out. And they say that is a huge problem. It just sends such a, it sends the wrong message. And then again, it results in all the issues that we're talking about today.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's this question that we tried to raise, in the film about moral hazard. And moral hazard was something that came up, you know, very prominently after the 2008 crisis, because the banks had played such a big role in the crash, in the crisis, and then they wound up getting bailed out. And I think in COVID, it was a little more complicated for many people, where they felt like, look, this is what was considered, quote unquote, an exogenous shock. This is, you know, not the fault of companies and not the fault of the financial world. But at the same time, what we were interested in, and I think what a lot of the people we interviewed for the film were interested in, is, you know, whether or not the Fed needed to do what it did is sort of secondary to these other questions about, well, what are the consequences? And one of the consequences, clearly, for many people on Wall Street, is this sense that the Fed will always be there in a crisis and will always kind of ride to the rescue. I mean, I was really fascinated by... I'm trying to make sure I get this right, but I think he's a hedge fund executive investor, Bill Ackman, who had what was called in some articles the greatest trade of all time. And that was that he was very, very worried about COVID in February and March 2020. He was very out there publicly, you know, saying this is going to be a huge problem and companies are not prepared. And he was sort of betting that that a lot of the debt that companies had taken on was going to be a problem. And then his quote unquote greatest trade of all time was that, I believe on March 23rd, he sort of bet that the Fed would step in and make sure that that didn't happen. And he made several billion dollars on that. But what that really is, in some essence, is, you know, Wall Street betting on the Fed. And betting that the cavalry will come and we will be okay. And so I just thought that was sort of it didn't make it into the film, but it was a story that I was fascinated by because it was so indicative of something. And, you know, I don't think you can say like the Fed shouldn't do anything, because we do have a very complicated financial system and the real economy is dependent on it. But it raises all kinds of interesting questions about, you know, the ethics of what's happening. And I think we just wanted to really kind of present those questions as something that we should all be talking about.
Well, it's a really important film. Thanks to you and your team for making this. Anya Borg is producer and journalist who's been making films for Frontline since 2014. The Power of the Fed is now online and you can watch it on demand. Anya, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Great to have you. One more fact to share with you related to this story. David Dayan with The Intercept reported that between March 23rd and April 30th of last year, the Dow rocketed 6,000 points, a jump of about 31%, creating over $7 trillion in wealth. These gains were the biggest since 1987. That same month, 20 million people lost their jobs. So we're definitely going to continue covering the Fed to find out who's actually making these decisions and what is Washington doing about this? Who's actually keeping an eye on the Fed? Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.